This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison and Noel Lim. It is 7.06 in the morning, Friday the 7th of May. And in about 15 minutes, we're going to be speaking with Wendy Ang, Country Head of Transaction Banking at Standard Chartered Bank Malaysia, on digital transformation for SMEs. But before that, let's take a quick look at the markets.
Yes, looking at the US markets, I see green. Dow was up 0.9%, S&P 500 up 0.8%, and the NASDAQ was up 0.4%.
And if we take a look over at Asian markets, Japan was up 1.8% after taking a three-day nap for three public holidays in a row. The Hang Seng was up 0.7%. The Shanghai Composite was down 0.2%. Taking a look closer to home, the Singapore STI was up 0.6%, and the FBM KLCI was up 0.2%. I think it had a little bit of a resurgence towards the later part of the day after the OPR was kept pat. Earlier in the day, I remember it was on the redder side of things.
And we're going to be taking a look at that Bank Negara decision later on at about 7.45. But first, for some analysis on where markets are heading, we have on the line with us this morning Tim Mulholland, President at TJM Limited, based in Chicago. Tim, thanks so much for joining us today. So on a broader level, Q1 earnings growth on US stocks has blown past market estimates. Will companies be able to replicate or beat that this quarter?
That's interesting because a lot of these companies, and especially some of the big tech names, actually sold off on profit-taking, you know, and sell the news. I think the concern is that it's dangerous to extrapolate these going forward and that you may be at peak earnings. And, you know, I have to say they're very optimistic and have quite aggressive assumptions built in for this continuing. So, you know, I think that you saw some profit-taking, but as you saw today, you know, the NASDAQ was down was it over 100 points or over, you know, almost half a percent or more? And then it rebounded to close higher. So you're seeing a rotation still in the market. So I think there's concern about valuations here for sure. And the rotation into value and cyclicals, financials and so forth is, I think, still alive.
So what would derail earnings?
Well, I tell you this, in my view, and I feel pretty strongly about it, and we'll see if I'm right, but I think that this inflation people believe is transitory, and probably for good reason, because you've been in a disinflation for 20, 30, maybe 35 years, and you've had all these false alarms. However, if inflation is not transitory and bond yields rise, the discount factor in bringing back future earning streams to present value is going to cause a re-rating. That's where the risk and growth is, because these assumptions are there and you're paying for this heady growth expectation. If you discount, if interest rates rise, the market's going to reprice. And I think that's the big risk. And I do believe that this inflation, from my point of view and from what I'm looking at, is not going to be transitory. And I think it's going to have effects on the dollar, bonds, and stocks.
Yeah, so looking at this week, there's been a sell-off of highly valued tech stocks like Tesla and Zoom this week, despite the U.S. 10-year yield not moving a lot. What's the market trying to tell us?
Yeah, in fact, the 10-year yield actually moved lower this week, but the Fed's still buying $120 billion. Core inflation that we saw last reading was only just above 1.5%, if you believe the core. But I think the gold market today told us something, and I think it's going to continue to tell us something. So my view is that everybody feels pretty comfortable because not that many people have ever seen inflation or a bear market in bonds. The last real bear market in bonds was 1994, and that was very brief. So, you know, this is something new. Well, I think what's going to validate my thesis is when you see bond yields rise and you see the dollar weakening. That to me is going to validate. I think that's at least is going to give me the feeling that I'm right and to, you know, push on this trade.
Earlier you talked about inflation, Tim. Let's talk a little bit about commodities because we've seen a surge in prices across the board here. So the commodity boom is driving prices of particular iron and oil companies up. Are resource or energy companies a sector to have in your portfolio, at least hedge or keep tabs on the inflation factor?
Yeah, I actually, you know, it wasn't feeling too good, late last year, but had bought, you know, energy stocks, and I've had a couple of that I've had for a while, but that have been okay. I think those for sure are going to be commodity, you know, metals, copper, look at iron ore. And, you know, I tell you, in the ag side, corn prices, corn's above $7 a bushel. I've never seen corn that high in my 40 years almost in the futures and commodity business. So that's pretty interesting. I think you're really seeing some real deal price movement, at least on the cost side, you know, but the demand side's there too, because you've got these, you know, this stimulus that we've had. So you've got the monetary M2 up 28% or so, and then you've got this fiscal stimulus and the savings rate high. So I think it's the tonic is set here for, I think, some inflation, and we will have some great discussions because I think there'll be a lot of interesting things going on in the market if and when that happens.
Now, Tim, how do financial markets also generally view Joe Biden's legislative strategy, namely both the American Jobs and Families Plan? Are they bullish or bearish over it?
I think most people are looking at it and not really giving it a lot of, I think, credibility in its current form, because I think it's whatever is passed is going to be very watered down from what is being proposed. Having said that, these measures, in my view, and I think we've talked about this before, aren't really going to be pro business, if you will. I think they can be headwinds facing and actually aggravate inflationary pressures. So, you know, again, it's these what's coming out, and I think in a negotiation standpoint puts out the total wish list, but understands he's not going to get it. But, you know, you also look at Mitch McConnell, who's, you know, steadfast against this. And it's not a layup. And the Senate's going to be very difficult, I think, to pass. So I think the market, to answer your question, is saying, yeah, okay, but I don't think it's going to get passed. And I think that's where we're at right now.
Tim, I wonder if we could get some thoughts on the Fed's semi-annual financial stability report, which came out yesterday. Overall, they said that the system remains largely stable despite the pandemic. But one part of the report did talk about high asset prices and that it reflected the continued level of low treasury yields that we've seen. However, they did note that valuations for some assets are elevated to historical norms, and are, especially in relative to the treasury yields, and that there are vulnerabilities to declines of asset prices. Which asset sectors do you see as most vulnerable to these kinds of potential declines that the Fed is worried about?
Well, we talked earlier, the growth stock sector. So I think the tech sector, high-flying tech and growth sector. So my trade would be here, in fact, one is to short the Qs and the NASDAQ 100 and to buy this S&P on a one-to-one basis, I think would be that's the number first place to look. But, you know, the Fed's done this and they say low bond yields, of course, manufactured low bond yields, which I think have distorted asset pricing for many, many years. They're still buying $120 billion a month in securities. And, you know, this is some high-powered stuff that they're doing right now. And I don't think that they really, from my feeling is they're looking at it and hoping that they don't have to act. Look, if the Fed has to move, if the market makes the Fed move, it will not be pretty. So they're banking that they're going to have their own schedule here for this thing. And, you know, I think the jury's very well out on that.
Tim, thanks so much for joining us this morning. That was Tim Mulholland, president of TJM Limited in Chicago, giving us some thoughts on where global markets really are headed. But of course, we mentioned earnings as well early in the call with Tim, and we do have some earnings news here. Germany's largest automaker, Volkswagen, has reported positive first quarter earnings, and this was driven mainly by strong sales in China. Sales in the first 3 months of 2021 rose 13% compared to a year earlier, to about $75 billion, and this is while operating profit also rose nearly sevenfold to $5.7 billion on year.
Well, get this, the better outlook is mainly driven by improved demand for high-margin premium cars like the Porsche and Audi. So Volkswagen also said that it was able to manage the shortage of semiconductors that has afflicted all car makers in recent months, I think, but they warned that the chip shortage could get worse in months to come.
A point of note here, vehicle sales in China, which is Volkswagen's largest market, rose more than 60%. I think for the year right now, the group expects operating profit margin to be between 5.5% and 7% this year versus the forecast of 5% to 6.5%. And as Noel mentioned, it's these high margin cars that are doing the performance that are performing on the street.
I'm guessing Chinese consumers cannot travel abroad, so they are buying expensive cars.
That's a trend we've seen, right, with a lot of the displacement. Money needs to move somewhere when it's burning a hole in your pocket.
We saw that with some of the luxury brands,
exactly.
LVMH, when they reported earnings as well.
All of them saw big numbers, a lot of strong earnings, a lot of it coming from Asia Pacific and the US, Europe being a laggard for most of them on the luxury side. And I guess that would be on the part of the on the back of the fact that there weren't that many Chinese tourists in Europe, right? A lot of them would travel to Paris to buy these products. Usually, now they're just buying it in their home market.
But speaking of buying at home, a lot of us have been doing paying for things from the comfort of our home. And another company here, digital payments company Square, also reported better than expected first quarter earnings, boosted by revenue from Bitcoin sales particularly. So first quarter revenue increased by 266% on year to just over $5 billion. So Square reported $3.5 billion in Bitcoin revenue, up 11 times year over year.
Yeah, so Square itself bought $50 million US dollars worth of Bitcoin in October and an additional $170 million US dollars in February. So the company said that as of March 31st, it had lost like $20 million US dollars on its Bitcoin investment for the quarter, but I guess they made it up somehow.
Yeah, so just as a barometer here, so gross profit grew 79% on year to just under $1 billion, about $960 million in the quarter. But as a part of that, Bitcoin gross profit was only $75 million, approximately about 2% of revenue on that, 2% of revenue, but about less than 10% of the gross profit in total over there.
Now, also looking at Peloton here, their third quarter sales saw growth of 141%, saying recent investments in its supply chain allowed them to improve deliveries. So Peloton's net loss shrank to $8.6 million or 3 cents per share. And this is compared with a loss of $55.6 million a year earlier. So this is much better than the 12 cent per share loss that analysts were anticipating. But a thing to note here is that this earnings report came out a day after Peloton had to issue a voluntary recall of all of its treadmills after some pretty tragic accidents. One child died and dozens others were injured in accidents involving their Tread Plus machines.
Yeah, so this voluntary recall of up to 125,000 treadmills will cost them $165 million and it will cease taking orders for now.
Very quickly, let's touch on Beyond Meat. They reported a wider than expected loss in the first quarter as restaurant customers take longer to return and grocery shoppers aren't stockpiling its meat substitutes anymore. This was something they saw last year, a little bit of pent-up demand. Grocery was what boosted their numbers. Now, Beyond reported a net loss of $287 million or 43 cents a share, down from net income of $1.8 million a year earlier. Analysts have been expecting a loss per share of around 19 cents. So this was more than double the expectations in terms of the loss side.
Way beyond
the meaty expectations. This is the third quarter in a row that Beyond has reported wider than expected loss.
So that's all the international news that we have for you for this moment. Up next, though, we're going to be speaking with Wendy Ang, Country Head of Transaction Banking at Standard Chartered Bank Malaysia, on SMEs and their digital transformation that's happening after these messages. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.